This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Women's Leadership Podcast. We've got a special guest today. I've got our Vice President of Editorial and Editor-in-Chief of the Becker's Hospital Review and Related Publications, Molly Gamble. We're going to talk about the business, best advice for women leaders, number of other issues. Molly, take a moment and introduce yourself, if you would.
Sure. Thanks, Scott. Thanks so much for having me. I know I'm following quite a lineup of impressive female leaders, so I'm flattered to be grouped among them. But like you said, I am Vice President of Editorial for Becker's Healthcare and Editor-in-Chief of Becker's Hospital Review. I work closely with several stakeholders. First and foremost, our wonderful team of 21 writers and editors, but really every department of the media business when it comes to content.
Well, fantastic. And tell us a little bit about, you intersect over two businesses. You cover fully the healthcare business, hospitals, health systems, health IT, et cetera, et cetera. And then you also obviously are a leader in the media business. Talk a little bit about some of the business trends you're seeing.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I thought I'd approach those trends from the intersection of healthcare and media since I'm straddling the two in my work. One trend we confront every single day is just the intensity of the news cycle, which is never ending and contains such a breadth of sources of information or misinformation, which is challenging in itself, but especially when paired with the fact that the human attention span is 8 seconds. So, how as a team do we stay on top of the healthcare news cycle, which in a single day can contain an executive order from the Trump administration, a quality breach at a major healthcare institution, a sudden CEO resignation, maybe a healthcare-related acquisition by Apple or Amazon? So much is happening. And then the other trend we face is the fact that there are 6 PR professionals for every 1 journalist today, not only in healthcare, but period. So our readers don't have the same goals as PR professionals, nor the companies who hire them. So we're constantly evaluating information and content to determine its value to the reader and whether this information or insight adds to the ongoing conversation on healthcare in a meaningful way.
Thank you. So sort of the speed of the news cycle coupled with the amount of things that your writers are inundated with, your reporters are inundated with, and trying to filter out what's really of value to the readers and what's not, what gives them the concise sense they need versus doesn't. And Molly, you're a remarkable sort of woman leader yourself. You're a remarkable leader yourself, woman or man. What's your best advice or some of your best advice for women as leaders or women leaders?
Yeah, best advice for women leaders. I think one of the most important things a female leader can do, I mean, any leader, but especially a female leader for her entire team, is to equip them with tools to better navigate the waters of networking. I think young professionals especially can feel awkward or inauthentic when networking, so they might avoid it altogether, and then they'll find themselves 10 years into a career with limited connections. So I think leaders who go out of their way to invite colleagues to working lunches, meetings, events, can really show them networking done well and help set an important example. And then, you know, the young professionals need to meet them halfway and make the most of those opportunities at FaceTime. And hopefully over time, those same young professionals will return the favor and do the same for others.
Well, and I think it's great advice because so many people today grow up, come out of college, come out of whatever their degree is, with these great technical skills, what they have to do. And one of the things that's not taught that much is sort of this networking and the other side of business, which is so important as a long-term career success, which is this networking, visiting with people, naturally enjoying it, growing it, and making those bridges and connections, which are so helpful just for ongoing motivation, aside from ulterior reasons, like that person might connect you to your next job. So I think it's just a great, great piece of advice. Molly, you've been in a journalist family, which is unusual. You've also got a sister in the healthcare world. And who is a female leader that you admire? Give us an example of somebody that you admire, that you look up to or think, yeah, that person sort of has it and does it right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's so many female leaders. They inspire me greatly. And, you know, they're not always the people above me in rank. Sometimes it's, you know, kind of neck and neck or a colleague or someone just next to me. But our CEO here at Becker's, Jess Cole, is a remarkable person. I've learned from her in more ways than she probably knows over the past 9 years. You know this, Scott, but for those who don't, Jess grew from intern to CEO of Becker's. She's one of the most ambitious, authentic people I have the privilege of knowing. I've worked with and for other inspiring women, and also many I've had the chance to interview and write about. But I would say probably the one overarching theme for all of them is that they don't lead with their gender. So any female I admire, it's not by virtue that we share a gender. It's because they are just an undeniably talented person and professional, and I stand to learn from how they have overcome implicit biases and assumptions they faced as a woman. Sometimes these women, like, they don't even see themselves as influential forces for gender equity, and those are people I would encourage other young women to keep an eye on. So the smartest, savviest, and most sophisticated mentors are oftentimes those who would introduce themselves with a dozen words, and maybe their gender falls somewhere in the middle to the end.
No, and I think that's a really critical point, that in some ways a leader's a leader, whether male or female, and this concept of not leading with it on your sleeve, and everybody has different opinions on this, and I know it's always sensitive words when you talk about it, but I think one of the things that you're saying is, you know, people bring out great emotional intelligence. Sometimes women bring it out far more than men, but you don't necessarily have to hit somebody over the head with it. It just mm-hmm. It can be reality at some point. So that's some great thought. And another sort of question, who's a mentor from your professional career? It can't be somebody at Becker's Healthcare that you've been mentored by or learned from, or that you've grown from. A couple thoughts on that.
Sure. So, I'll listen to the Becker's Healthcare rule. I was going to say, I thought this question would assume, you know, it already acknowledges two of the most significant, being you, yourself, and Jess, like I said. But beyond you two, if I had to look beyond you two, I think there's dozens of people in my life who are mentors to me, and they don't even know it. So the reason is this. It's because people are crazy busy, and if I sit back and think a wise sage is going to take me under his or her wing as a mentee, I'm kind of kidding myself. So I try to make a point to identify people's strengths and what they really excel in that I stand to improve upon and learn from them in everyday interaction. So it's amazing what you can learn by just paying attention to how people operate in their element. You know, my realtor is amazing at getting her point across while remaining completely pleasant. She never loses her patience. My friend is one of the most brilliant conversationalists I've ever met. There's a lot of journalists whose work I admire. I read it voraciously. I listen to podcasts of how they approach their work, how they think about it, watch videos of them speaking on panels. I mentioned Jess. You know, there was one time I asked her if I could sit in her office while she made a difficult business phone call just to hear exactly how she opened, conducted, and closed that conversation. So I view mentorship. I have many. Some don't even know it, but I view that work as entirely on me. I don't expect anybody to take me to coffee and show me the way they navigate the world and hone their skills. Instead, I strive to just be really observant and learn from them while they're simply living their lives.
No, and I think that's fantastic. And Molly, you're someone who's got this great mix of the ability to get things done, to get them done intelligently, and to have a very fair persona and a very emotionally mature persona with everybody that you work with. Does that emotional maturity, that ability to deal with people in an even-handed way, you know, on good days and bad days, where does that come from? Is that learned? Is that built? Is that something you have to work at? How does that come about?
Yeah, I wish I knew. I'm not perfect at it. Like you said, I still have my bad days. I think I've just tried to view technical skills, like you mentioned earlier. I don't think they outweigh. I don't think brilliance is more important than great interpersonal skills. So Al McGuire, I went to Marquette, and Al McGuire, the legendary basketball coach, was kind of famous for saying that you don't have a complete education until you're a cab driver for 6 months and a bartender for another 6 months. Just kind of, in his words, just emphasizing the skills of relating to people, listening, kind of putting yourself in their shoes. And I do really think that that is valuable, and people who I've definitely learned and gotten better from other influential people who have put those to the test, and I've seen what amazing things can be accomplished when you really uphold those as important values.
Well, and I think that's a great point, and I love the Al McGuire advice. And we see so much of this today where someone, many of us as parents, and I'm 20, 30 years older than you, have raised children where they get so much accolades for being great in school and being great in their sports and or being great in their activities, their extracurricular activities. And like Al McGuire says, you don't really develop your personal skills. You've also actually worked some, and sometimes in the service industry, a bartender, a cab driver. I love that because it forces a whole different level of evolution of the person aside from just the achievement-oriented things that the parents so strive for in their kids. It's that other part of those personal skills that evolve so well if the children, if all of us as adults, are forced to live in multiple different roles. So I just love the piece of advice on sort of like, this is what helps develop a complete emotionally mature person and a professional in the workplace. It's not just great achievement orientation, not just great STEM skills, but these other skills as well. So just a magnificent thought, Molly. Thank you. If you have somebody coming out of journalism school today, a couple pieces of advice for that young journalist or old journalist, a couple of pieces of advice for what a journalist ought to be thinking about today.
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing I would encourage them to think about is to just keep an open mind about opportunities that come up. So when I earned my journalism degree, there was a program for journalism, a program for advertising, program for broadcast. It was very siloed, and I don't really think that's the case anymore for the media landscape. You've got podcasting, writing, you have all these different mediums that you kind of need to have a bit of skill and savvy in all of them. So if you're looking for a job, looking for an internship, I think the more lanes and avenues you consider, the stronger a candidate you will be, and the stronger, more balanced professional. And then the other thing I would say is just don't wait. So that was the biggest piece of advice I got when I was graduating, was just don't wait for the right time to do everything. So kind of if you aren't feeling like you're exactly ready for an opportunity, you don't obviously want to be irresponsible about it. But I think, you know, maybe just jump in and just see what you can do, what you can accomplish. You know, also experience is everything in journalism. So if you can get into a newsroom and start working versus going for continued education, that's definitely a personal choice, but I do think there is some merit in that too, in just terms of hopping into the workforce and getting started versus feeling like you're not ready or there's yet to be a perfect time for a move that you haven't come to yet. I think the more you can be active and just proactive, the better off you'll be.
Molly, just a great pleasure visiting with you, and I love your advice to the young journalist, which is, one, you've got to at least test these different disciplines. You know, a young journalist today, a senior journalist today, is really a multimedia journalist. There's all kinds of different ways to make a living in journalism and to thrive in journalism. The other thing you said is don't be afraid to start working, and don't be afraid to try other things, attack forward, sort of. And we get this so much from young people that they're sort of concerned, they're not confident enough, and what they don't realize is if they just dive in, they're going to be okay, and they're going to get some help, and they're going to do great. So I love that advice. Another thought, Molly, you've overseen the period of great growth in our media organization. This year goes well for you professionally or for your team. What does that kind of look like? What does success look like this year for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, professionally success looks, it's completely tied to my team's success. So working with an energetic, motivated, confident group of writers, reporters, editors, the biggest thing I can do is just support a newsroom of talented, hardworking people and ensure they're challenged enough and they're directing their ambition toward the right things. It's a pleasure every day, but I that's the biggest indicator of a successful year for me is how they're doing. And then secondly, you know, personally, this year will contain some firsts for me. So I'm in the process of buying my first home right now. I'm also training for the Chicago Marathon, both of which are exciting and rewarding, but also very unfamiliar. So it's been healthy to dive into some brand new territory, and I am looking forward to the results of both those events.
Well, sort of, and I love that. Obviously, if your team is thriving, you're thriving, and you've built a great team of great, great people that are working hard and trying to make sure that the newsroom, the editorial team, remains one of the crown jewels of the healthcare media company. And then running your first marathon, buying your first home, you know, with luck, at some point you'll be able to combine that and run to the home and back from the home and so forth, which is really a magnificent thing. Molly, I've had the great pleasure to work with you for almost 10 years now. You're just a wonderful, wonderful human being and leader. So it's just a pleasure to get a chance to visit with you on the phone today and the podcast today. Thank you very, very much. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.